Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, and the views of our guest this afternoon or this evening. Our special guest is Michael Shaw from Freedom Advocates, and he, of course, is involved in trying to educate the American people about the danger of sustainable development and Agenda 21, which is the elitist program for the agenda for the 21st century. And there is a program to use the environment and the threat of environmental degradation to alter our form of government, to alter our way of life. So, without further ado, Michael, it's good to have you back with us again.
Dan, it's great to be here. It's always a real pleasure to be on Radio Liberty.
All right, well, I'm just going to let you pick up the ball and run with it.
Well, freedom is what we're talking about, and freedom is the political condition that allows people to be who they are. It protects each individual's capacity to develop. Now, each individual exists in a community comprised of other individuals. Some of these people know that by abolishing freedom, they can control others. And a few people get off on that idea. Tonight, I'm going to talk about the philosophy and the economics of sustainable development. While doing so, I invite the audience to identify sustainable developers, or we can define those sustainable developers as collectivists who seek to control the lives of others. Everyone knows something's wrong, and I'll contend that by understanding sustainable development and its philosophy, people will know what it is that has focused that wrongness in our society. Sustainable development is the philosophy designed to bring human beings across the globe under the full control of a narrow human elite. Sustainable developers have designed a global movement coordinated through a global to local action plan in order to create a world governance that is in accordance with certain objectives. The objectives include an end to national sovereignty, the abolition of private property, the restructure of the family unit, and increasing limitations and restrictions on mobility and individual opportunity. The methods for achieving these goals include heavy funding by the federal government. It is being achieved literally through 1,000 points of darkness that include United States monetary policy, our tax policy, our water policy, environmental policy, war policy, education policy, and foreign policy. The focus of sustainable development is the abolition of private property, societal undermining of the family, and the abandonment of constitutional protections for unalienable rights as described in the Declaration of Independence.
And, of course, these things are all underway at the present time. And, of course, the family, this is not a family of values that I was raised with. This is not the country I was raised in, 60 years ago when I was just a boy. And, of course, none of these things have happened by accident. People want to tell you they have. No, there's been a grand plan out there by people who have a different world vision, who have a different world view, and they're using sustainable development to change the world forever. Well, Michael, you're right ahead with the story.
Well, the globalist sustainable movement is comprised in America to include Democrat Party leadership, Republican Party leadership, communist anarchists, anarchist libertarians. Greens, public-private partners, including many multinational corporations. Socialists, neoconservatives, like the president, capitalists, and third-wave Fabians. There's something for everybody. The political elite have called for a political consensus, and they say it's been attained through sustainable development. But if you look at the big picture, the sustainable globalist goal is an orchestration of a planned fall for American principles, values, and lifestyle. And I think it's easy once one understands what sustainable development is all about, it's easy to conclude that the effect on the average American will be devastating. So it's important that the word get spread about the existence of sustainable development. It's in every county in the country. It is a worldwide movement. If you go into the internet and click on to Agenda 21, which is the formal term for sustainable development, you get millions of hits. Most of them are outside this country. But if you look at sustainable development, you get tons of them inside this country. And where we are, you know, Stan, in Santa Cruz, we were one of very few counties that adopted a formal Agenda 21 program. They call it the local Agenda 21 program here in Santa Cruz. But every other county has the same program with a different title. In Monterey, it's called Common Ground. In places like Sonoma, it's called 2020. And there's lots of little warm and fuzzy terms that cover the reality of the existence of sustainable development policy in your community. I don't care where you are in America. And so that's why it's important that we all begin to understand what sustainable development is and what it is designed to produce for each and every American. In fact, for America, sustainable development really is designed to be the end of the American experience. That means having a life that is your own. So people who ignore it, or who want to call it folly or conspiracy. Maybe 30 years ago you could have said this is a conspiracy. It is so out in the open now.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Michael Shaw from Freedom Advocates. And basically he's saying that this movement towards sustainable development is being pushed in the United States by the leaders of both political parties. On the left, by the communists and the communist anarchists, and by the environmentalists, and by but on the right, by the libertarians, and certainly by the neoconservatives, and the people in the White House, and great corporations, people of great wealth, are pushing this whole agenda, and it's all the same agenda, left or right. It all has to do with centralization of power in government. It all has to do with limiting our individual freedom and using the educational process and the financial process and the business process and to bring about this modification of our way of life and destroying our property rights, destroying our freedom, destroying our constitutional concepts of freedom. So with that as a background, please go ahead, Michael.
Well, that was a tremendously stated background. Thank you. Let's talk about a symbol used by sustainable developers. You'll find it in their literature. It pops up in school programs. You know, most people haven't seen it or don't know about it, but it's why it's worth explaining, because when you do see it, you're able then to begin to identify the local branch, if you will, of this globalist to local movement called sustainable development. Their symbol is an interconnected series of three circles, and each circle is then identified as one of the, quote, three E's. So this is the sustainable development 3E circle logo used everywhere, modified for this or that, but once you see it the first time, you'll be able to recognize its outcroppings. But what the three E's are these: equity, economy, and environment. sustainable equity really means the restructure of human nature. So it works off communist notions of social justice. It really worked to abolish the American concept of equal justice in order to pursue the globalist idea of common good. So it's this pursuit of a centrally determined common good that ultimately requires the, we'll call it the right-wing contribution to this dynamic, which is a police state so that you can suppress individual freedoms. You see, freedom is what is the target of sustainable development. Now, the second E of sustainable development is economy. Sustainable development relies on Fabian socialist economics, which, like Italian fascism, relies on business that want the protection afforded by government's legalized force, and government that wants the power of business. Today, they call that sweet and soft public-private partnership. But what public-private partnership means is the unification of Mussolini's business with his 13 selected corporations. It is fascism. It's the economics applied by Adolf Hitler. We condemned him for that, while in the background, America has been moving that way, along with the rest of the world, in accordance with a program that in 1992 is suddenly called Sustainable Development. The economics of sustainable development are public-private partnership. It is a fascist system of control. Now, the third E is the environment. Sustainable development is not really about saving nature. It's about a revolutionary coup. A politically based environmental movement provides sustainable developers camouflage as they work to transform the American systems of justice, economics, and government. So that's where we're sitting today. We're sitting all subjected to the three E's. If you really begin to digest that information, begin to see signs of the left and signs of the right in this one pie. And that's what really fuels the whole sustainable development movement, is creating this false dialectic between the left and the right, with each side designed to take us down, down, down toward a system, a tyrannical system, of government control of all human action. So, what I think is that people need to grab on to some examples of this dynamic that they can understand and relate to, and begin through that vision to begin to see or understand the broader picture of the totality of the sustainable development takedown. Let me offer a few examples of ideas of how you might connect the dots. I think what did it for me back in 2000 or 2001 was an understanding, really understanding, how the Federal Reserve works. U.S. Federal Reserve notes are what I call funny money. I've called that since I was an early 20-year-old. Now I understand why. It's because funny money has no real backing. It's a piece of paper printed for a few cents, $100 is put on it, and then it's lent to somebody. Well, the guy who spent a few cents to make that money, you know, gets an interest yield off of it for all time. Now, the guys who are making that money out of thin air have been making 5 to 10% over the money base for almost 100 years now. That's the economic system that allows for the concentration a total economic, political, and social control over all people. We're in trouble with the monetary system that we have today. Now, another way to root your understanding in understanding the globalist dots that operate in America today is to recognize the effort that seeks to abolish private property. Just last year, the United States Supreme Court, in a decision called Kelo and an earlier one named after the governor of Hawaii, Lingle versus Chevron, decided that the public use requirement of the Fifth Amendment, which means that before government can condemn property, there must be a public use, a school or a road, for that property. In 2006, they said, no. You can have government take a citizen's property so that government can give that property, oh, let's say, to a Spanish corporation in order to build a toll road right to your farm. That's 230 years of jurisprudence based upon a simply and clearly stated principle in the Constitution, simply overruled by the decision of five people. No American's property interest is any longer protected from a taking by virtue of the U.S. Constitution. Private property is under massive attack in this country. The stories about local takings of private property are legendary, especially if you're from Santa Cruz. That goes beyond the scope of what we're going to talk about tonight, but it's further evidence of the massive attack on private property. Another way to understand the big picture is to recognize the advance of so-called communitarian law. Communitarian law is designed to move us from a system of equal justice, the system set out for us in the Declaration of Independence, to a system of social justice. Social justice, we talked about earlier, is really a communist system. Communitarian, communist, the same thing. It's the idea that no individual has inalienable or natural or basic rights. That instead, what's important is that the community's rights as to each and every individual are enforced. So that's really the way tyranny is rooted in a society, is through its justice system. And it's our changes from the unique experience of equal justice, unique in the realm of all human history, to a system of social justice, which is the prevailing justice system in throughout communist countries today or totalitarian countries of any past era. They've all been based on an idea that the community's rights prevail as against yours.
But, of course, the whole idea there was that the ruling elite within these communities were the ones who had really control. In other words, the rights of the individual were to be subservient to government, but, of course, there would always be somebody running government. And here in America, why, there is a slogan, think globally but act locally. Think globally but act locally. And so the people on the left who wanted power have insinuated themselves into government, got themselves elected, organized, taken over local governments all over, and then use that to take away people's property. Not realizing, of course, that what they've done is undermine the very structure of our Constitution, where the concept was that we had God-given rights. That's what it says in the Declaration of Independence. And that the government was created to protect those God-given rights. They're taking away all of our rights in the name of collectivism. Go right ahead, Michael.
Well, the fourth element of that I'll point to for this transformation is to take a focus on...
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mined supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Most Americans are iodine deficient today because they stopped adding iodine to our milk and to our flour, and only about half of the salt that's consumed in the United States today contains iodine. So Radio Liberty has produced a four-tape or a four-CD set that discusses the health benefits of iodine. We also offer Iodorol. It contains 12.5 milligrams of iodine per tablet. And we also offer potassium iodide tablets that'll protect your thyroid gland in case there's a nuclear attack. So if you'd like to order these products or obtain additional information, why don't you call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Or go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. Once again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
You got headaches? Most headaches are caused by a structural weakness of blood vessels in the head, and the blood vessels are tending to balloon, causing a headache. The structural weakness is due to a deficiency. Correct the deficiency and the body will heal itself. I blended what I believed to be the missing nutrients in the right proportions, and the headaches went away. When they were gone, they stayed gone. I named it Headache Stay Gone. See HeadacheStayGone.com or call 800-327-0727 for more information or to place an order. I'll send you a bottle of Headache Stay Gone. Headache Stay Gone will cure your headaches and prevent them from coming back before you pay the bill. Headache Stay Gone has already cured the worst migraines I have ever heard of. Call 800-327-0727. All orders are shipped the same day. Call 800-327-0727. That's 800-327-0727.
Hi, this is Dr. Tony Teary. Are you one of the many people who take vitamin supplements? Do you take handfuls of pills each day to increase energy, reduce your pain, or improve your overall health? Now there is a better way to get the vitamins and minerals your body needs in a delicious-tasting whole food liquid supplement, Body Balance. Body Balance contains 121 essential vitamins and minerals and is made from only organic and natural sources. Developed by doctors, Body Balance was originally available only through healthcare professionals. Now this incredible whole food liquid supplement can be delivered directly to your home. Body Balance offers an extremely effective method to feed your body towards wellness, and we're confident you'll love the difference your body feels. To order your Body Balance, call me directly at 1-800-768-9763 and try it risk-free for 45 days. Again, that's 1-800-768-9763 or online at healthyfoundations.net.
Movie, motion picture that was actually produced over in Great Britain. It shows about the global warming swindle.
Well, it shows the infamous charts on the wall behind Al Gore in his movie An Inconvenient Truth. It shows those charts superimposed. Now, one chart was global warming, was CO2 emissions, and the other was the temperature rise or decrease. And you can clearly see from these two charts that there are parallel lines. But when you superimpose the two charts over a millennium's period, you find that warming advances and CO2 follows.
Okay, so
what is alleged as a cause by Gore is shown with his own information as an effect.
And it's, I think really what's so terribly important for our listeners to understand is why that occurs. Because the great sop in our society, what absorbs most of the CO2 is not necessarily even the plants, it's the oceans. And, of course, when the oceans are cooler, why, they absorb more CO2. As it begins to heat, more CO2 is released in the atmosphere from the oceans. And that's why the CO2 levels follow the temperature rather than, cause the temperature rise. So the temperature rise comes, the CO2 then actually begins to go up following the rise in the temperature. But they never tell you that. Certainly mankind is probably putting more CO2 into the atmosphere, but the biggest cause of it is coming out of the oceans. Isn't that where it's coming from?
That's my understanding.
Right, but they never tell you that. How could you keep that from being known in America with freedom of the press? Why, we don't have freedom of the press. Freedom of the press means if you own the press, you have the freedom to withhold the information from the American people. And 5 mega corporations that tie into the environmental movement are owned 95% of the major media outlets in America. Go right ahead, Michael.
Well, I think that's an excellent point, because people say, well, free society, how do you concentrate this kind of control? Well, you do it through a funny money system where you congregate mass sums of money in certain select interests, and then you go out and you buy the means of production. First, you buy the means of communication. That's why our media outlets are owned by a small 5, mega national firms. And between them, they're able to pitch this program that really will subject the world into 2 classes of people, a very narrow elite at the top. And the rest of us is chattel, serving the elite in accordance with the numbers of us they want us to have, and in the pursuits designed by them for us. It is the loss of freedom. It is what America was based upon. It is what this generation has to rise up and restore. It was Thomas Jefferson who said there was going to be a 20-year cleansing process that America would have to go through perpetually. He did that 230 years ago, and we haven't had one cleansing. We're overdue. It doesn't happen soon. Freedom will be lost. Succeeding generations. Freedom will be lost to those living here now. Freedom is at real risk. Now, the components of sustainable development ideology, I'll go through 4 of them. One is the, 3 of them, the abolition of private property, the educational transformation, and population control. Now, when I say population control, I don't just mean a police state. I mean controlling the numbers of people as well as the police state. But when we look at the abolition of private property, it's important to recognize and understand what private property is. Because many people either haven't learned or they've forgotten what it is. So, the character of private property is unsubsidized productive effort and voluntary trade. The ideals of private property protect the freedom to think and the freedom to express, because those ideals require that a culture adhere to the principles that guarantee to each of us freedom of action, limited only by the respect for the property of another. Government exists to enforce that respect. I can't poison your property, you can't poison mine. That's the law that needs to be enforced.
We're going to be out there. We're going to be coming back in just a moment. Our guest this evening is Michael Shaw of Freedom Advocates, and we're essentially talking about sustainable development. We'll be back here in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Michael, why don't you go right ahead from there?
All right. Well, talking about private property, let's get to the essence of what it is. The essence of private property lies in an owner's determination of use. See, we need to understand that private property is not a thing. It's the relationship between a person and something. The essence of that relationship is the owner's determination of the property's use. So, let me give some illustrations that demonstrate the transformation of private property, really the effort to abolish private property. First is eminent domain. We talked a little bit about that earlier in the U.S. Supreme Court case in Kelo, which eliminated the public use requirement before the government can take your property. That's why these public-private partnerships are just swelling their muscles all around the country. They're bringing this Trans-Texas Corridor from the middle of Mexico to the middle of Canada. It's really a Trojan horse designed to bring in military and economic ingredients from, well, China, of all places. Protecting the essence of private property is essential to freedom. Second thing I'd point to is the Sustainable Development Action Plans. You know, for land use, the land use element of sustainable development has two action plans. One's called the Wildlands Project. We see evidence of that in every day's newspaper. Our open areas or natural areas have increasing controls put upon them, while at the same time the government has effected management policies that automatically result in massively increased fires. We've been seeing that now for a decade. The Wildlands Project is designed to take people off of 50% of the U.S. landmass. Now, when I take people off, no extractions will be allowed. So the resources we need, some renewable and some just, you know, this era's tool for achieving certain ends, will be prohibited. When you prohibit America's use of its own natural resources, you are guaranteeing human strife and population reduction. Well, that's okay with the sustainable developers. The other action plan is called Smart Growth. Everyone who is relocated from the wildlands areas or from their buffers, which constitute another 40% of the U.S.
I'm going to ask you to hold that right there for a moment as we bring our other stations right back on. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course our guest this evening is Michael Shaw from Freedom Advocates, and he's talking about the projects. First of all, something called the Wildlands Project, which you may not heard of, but if you have a computer, if you go up on the internet and type in Wildlands Project, you'll find that there is a plan to take approximately 50% of the land in the United States and pull it into wilderness areas where people will not be allowed to go, and where all people will be forced off of that land into sustainable communities. And then another 25% of the land will be sort of a transitional area where some people can go in there, but certainly they want to restrict its use. And then of course, with the other 25% of the land, that's where you put all of the people. And then, of course, this whole idea of these sustainable communities where people will be forced to live in crowded conditions. And, of course, one of the major thrusts of this whole movement is population control, because they, the elite, believe there are too many people in the world. Well, before we go on, Michael, I'd like you to get your website out and your telephone number so people would know how to get hold of Freedom Advocates.
Well, Freedom Advocates can be located at freedomadvocates.org. Very simple. A lot of information there. We've been compiling writings for the last 6 years or so. It's a good view of not only what goes on in the Central Coast in California, but we have writers now from across the country. And of course, our focus has always been the broad picture of how globalism is affecting the local community. They call it a global-to-local program. What we say is that we need a local-to-national program to really recover what is being lost with increasing speed.
Amen to that.
And our phone number is 831-684-2232. That's 831-684-2232. And while at our website, it's not just all the information that's there. We've got a store that'll give you lots of tools, from pamphlets to videos to, you know, various writings for circulation in your own community. Because until communities begin to understand at the individual level that their local government is involved in global to local sustainable development policy, until local people understand that, it isn't going to be fought, and you're going to fall victim. So it's important that you begin to look at sustainable development, inform your friends, neighbors, and relatives about what it is, and begin a truly grassroots effort in this country to protect ourselves.
Amen to that. Well, all right, fine. Well, go right ahead. Then you were talking about these various programs. You mentioned the Wildlands Project, and then, of course, the drive to get people certainly away from out of their homes and certainly then into these sustainable communities. So you pick your story up.
Well, and that includes, I mean, it is not sustainable to live in suburbia. So you don't have to live out in the boonies to be to feel that you're going to become subject to this attack. Suburbanites will be put, are on the list, and the move against them will begin soon. I mean, I'm reported from people in England that it has begun there, where suburbanites are having their homes ripped down and they're being, you know, kind of taken and given government housing in the local smart growth project that's maybe 30 stories high with children, government-provided children daycare in the ground floor and a central dining hall, which is where everybody eats their meals that are prescribed to them by government order, and where you get on a train to go to your assigned job during the day. That is the ultimate outcome of smart growth. Makes it very easy to manipulate or eliminate substantial populations with one fell swoop.
And that's really very interesting. A lot of this is going on in New Orleans now. I mean, we always wonder why those levees gave way half an hour after the storm had passed, and now we find out that many people whose homes are in fine shape, or they've got them all fixed up, and you know, they're very livable, they're comfortable, and suddenly they find they're condemned because they want to take vast sections of the city and turn it into alternative living conditions. And I'm sure that some of these will be a part of this sustainable movement that is being brought in. Of course, it's usually the people in the poor areas of town, but that house is their home, and they either preserved it during the flood or they fixed it up after the flood, but that doesn't matter. The elite have made their decision, and of course they're going to prevent them, people, from living in their homes. They're simply going to take them away from them and leave the people destitute and homeless.
Yes. Well, another element that helps some people connect the dots is to look at water policy. Water policy is kind of an unsung dynamic happening throughout particularly the western part of the United States. But you can take states like Texas and California, which really had the prototype private property protecting water law. I mean, private property, properly understood, extends to the center of the earth on a diagonal slice. And so the water that lies under a farmer's land is his water to pump and use. Well, throughout California, Santa Cruz has been the prime example. The forces, the sustainable forces, have come in with what they call conjunctive use rules. The purpose of conjunctive use rules is as follows. The idea is that if you pipe water from one aquifer to another, insert that new water into say, a coastal aquifer like Santa Cruz, that the water is no longer subject to any private property assertion. So the farmers in Paro Valley, with the water district that was established in order to bring water over from the Central Valley, were stripped. First they were taxed, $250 an acre foot, for the production of their own water. And the result over time would have been that these farmers were going to be taxed out of existence so that the farmlands could then be conveyed to public-private partners, down to a few farmers.
In other words, the big corporations would be able to come in and simply take over the farmland. And what a beautiful way to be able to get the farms away from the farmers and into the hands of the corporate elite would be to use these environmental laws, and specifically the water laws. And, of course, they set up their water boards not to solve the problem, but to keep the problem from being solved so they could carry out their agenda. And, of course, certainly the Sierra Club had their people and infiltrated their people surreptitiously into so many of the water boards so that they could block solutions so they could create the problems.
Well, that's exactly right, Stan. It's certainly been the case here in Santa Cruz County, but let's make this point, too. The Sierra Club is a non-governmental organization, or so-called NGO. Now, what an NGO is an organization that is accredited by the United Nations for purposes of implementing sustainable development policy. The Sierra Club's primary action plan is to gain control over water districts so they can, in this state, so they can implement conjunctive water loss rules and destroy any private interest in water so that only public-private partners would remain as farmers.
Again, of course, here in our community where we live, 35 years ago, they were planning and put in this Zianti Dam. And that would have provided adequate water for certainly all of the county for, you know, generations to come. And, of course, they blocked that. They even invented an artificial Zianti humpback slug, the endangered Zianti humpback slug. And they wrote letters to the water board saying, I mean, you can't develop this dam, this reservoir. You will endanger the Zianti humpback slug. Now, it didn't exist, but that didn't matter, because none of this is real. Simply, they wanted to block the development of a dam, the Zianti reservoir, so they could create the problems that we face today. Long-term planning, but it all fits together, because, of course, they control the water, they control the land, they can control the people, and they can force them to do whatever they want them to do.
Well, that's exactly right. I'll give a fourth example of how to connect these dots. If you study or give thought to the globalist free trade policy, a guy like me is certainly not opposed to free trade. I mean, freedom requires free trade. I ought to be able to trade with you. Okay? But this definition, this globalist definition of free trade, turns any reasonable meaning of that term upside down. Because what we're really talking about with today's newspaper pronouncements of free trade agreements is managed trade agreements. Agreements for trade that are managed by global governance operations like the World Trade Organization, all for the purpose of benefiting their constituency, which is the, you know, the founding instrument of all this, the globalist banks, and their camaraderies out in globalist corporate forms, and their buddies in the political system that are supporting the sustainable development agenda. Globally managed economic policy destroys national sovereignty. So once the globalist phony free trade is fully secured, only time exists before world governance settles into place with unlimited power over the individual. That's certainly what's happening in Europe. If you consider the continental trade policy, which undermined their sovereignty, which came prior to their formal loss of political independence, which all happened via creation of the European Union.
And because that's just what they really wanted to do here, Michael. They lied to the people in Europe. They told them, "What? We're never going to do away with your sovereignty. We're never going to have a European Parliament. We're never going to have a European currency. This is just a trade program. That's all it is, and everybody will benefit from trade." I mean, you don't think we'd lie to you, do you? And, of course, most people would ask that question, would say, well, of course, we don't think you'd lie to us. But they were lying. They knew what they were doing all the time. And the same thing is planned here in the United States, to do away with our sovereignty in the name of trade and to merge us with Mexico and Canada, and then, of course, to simply eliminate our constitutional protections and merge us into a North American community, just like they have a European community and similar communities throughout the world. They know exactly what they're doing, and they're lying, and they control both political parties, and they control all the media. The only person who's telling you the truth is Lou Dobbs, and of course, they're advancing very, very rapidly, and that's why they don't seal our southern border. They're not sealing our southern border with Mexico, because they want to encourage this immigration, the multicultural, multilingual society. They're not building a fence down there. They have no intention of building that fence, despite the fact that law was enacted last year that required the executive branch to build it. They have no intention. Congress has passed legislation saying you can't use any federal funds to go ahead and build this NAFTA highway, but they're using federal funds and going ahead doing it because we no longer have a government that's answerable to the people. It is simply, or even to our elected legislature, we have a group of people in positions of power who desire power, who have an agenda, and it's being rapidly implemented, and the average American has no idea what's happening.
I think that's exactly right, although people in Texas are rising up against this Trans-Texas Corridor.
Right.
And we're seeing various other risings and awarenesses beginning to bubble up. It has moved beyond the realm of where the expression of these realities, not their words, not my words that are being used here, it's their description of dynamics that are verifiable from many sources, you know, so it can't be characterized as a conspiracy anymore or a theory. It was a conspiracy. Now it's an implementation program, and pretty soon they're going to be done. And so when you raise the public's attention to these issues, it's starting to capture a more receptive ear. Now, that does mean that the program's pace is going to accelerate. I think we're already seeing that. I think we're seeing a president who is running for a finish line. He doesn't give a damn what the American people think. He's got a goal. They're catching on, and he's in a all-out sprint in the wide open for the implementation of sustainable development policy. Now, that doesn't mean we need to put Hillary Clinton in office. Her husband was just as committed to the globalist program as is Bush. That's why the old man Bush and Bill Clinton walk around arm in arm looking at tsunami victims, etc. You know, they are on the same team. It doesn't matter who we elect, with the possible exception of Ron Paul, because they're all sustainable developers committed through party operations to the implementation of this globalist strategy, all the while pointing their finger at the other side of the left-right spectrum. They're in it together. Americans are not so unlikely to accept that reality today as they were just a few short years ago. The pace for the determination of multiple generations into the future are at stake right now. And that's why it's important that we do our duty to succeeding generations, protect their interest in individual liberty, and get this concept of globalism, whether it's economic or social justice or the environmental scam, we need to get that out of our politic, get back to the business of managing our lives, our families, and our property. Our educational system is the second major component of sustainable development. It is designed increasingly to indoctrinate our youth for a system of global governance. Here in Aptos, where the school district in which my family lives, the school doesn't teach anything about Constitution, but it does have a model UN club. And it teaches kids that their mission is to help create a globalist world. Now, mom and dad might be just like you and me, but their children are being indoctrinated with new ideas. You say, well, Santa Cruz County, that's not the rest of the country. And I say, no, we've got the same battle over No Child Left Behind here that you do wherever you are, because it is federal law that has decreed that this is the decade for sustainable development education. So we've got to remember that No Child Left Behind is a Bush-Kennedy piece of legislation, left-right. It's designed in part to root a new system of justice. The Los Angeles County School District teaches the precautionary principle as the core of American justice. The precautionary principle says you can take no step that might cause harm to the environment. That's why the Federal Department of Interior and the Santa Cruz County Planning Department got together for a scheme that found that landowners who did not sign an agreement to avoid walking on their own property during the winter time because they might step on a long-toed salamander would be prevented all permit uses.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, Michael, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
Well, I think I'd summarize this by saying America is facing its greatest challenge ever. And it's up to the baby boomers, coupled with their offspring, to set a system that we've allowed to get way out of control. And we've got to put it back in place. We don't have a lot of time. The easy money is still flowing despite the appearance of a looming credit crunch out there. Now is the time for people to restock on what the ideals of individual liberty and the human dignity that results from that are all about. Because if we don't, our children, our children's children, and on are going to be denied the things that we grew up simply expecting. So now is the time to deal with the reality, see the facts as they are, learn about sustainable development. As you do, you'll understand it is globalist tyranny, that it will affect everyone, and that now is the time to do something. So I encourage people to look at our website. We'll lead you to other places. We certainly want to help supply tools for you to take on the challenge in your community, because one community after the other, it will make a vibrant and compounding resolution to the massive problems that we face today as free human beings. That's our mission, to stay free. And to do that, we're going to have to be suspect, increasingly suspect, the political operatives running our process.
And the difficulty is that most people do not understand that the leaders of both political parties are going exactly the same direction. There's no difference between the Republicans and the Democrats and towards globalism, towards environmentalism. There's certainly at the state levels there is opposition, and we find in Texas almost unanimously the legislators voted against the NAFTA highway, but that didn't do any good. I mean, it's going to go ahead anyway because of pressure from the federal government and national legislators voted against appropriating money for the NAFTA highway, but it's going to go ahead anyway because there are people who do not believe in the law, who hold positions of power in our government today. And of course, they're using the threat of terrorism to establish a police state in America, monitoring every individual in the name of preventing terrorism. Well, our guest has been Michael Shaw. Michael, let's get your telephone number out one more time and your website.
It's freedomadvocates.org. Our number is 831-684-2232.
All right, God bless, and thank you so very much. And the website again,
freedomadvocates.org.
Thank you so much. Bye bye.
Thank you, Dr. Stan.
All right, fine. Well, that was Michael Shaw. I hope you enjoyed him. And Michael will be one of the speakers we're going to have at our conference. We have an annual conference. It's going to be on the 28th of October. It's going to be on a Sunday because we get a lot of people that can come that day that can't come other days. So we do hope that you're going to be able to come. We're going to have Dr. Garth Nicholson, a internationally known scientist. We're going to have Ron Brown talking on finance. Michael Shaw will be there. We'll have a great lineup of speakers. So give us a call if you're interested in coming. You need a reservation. Of course, we have, if you're from other parts of the country, why, we'll give you instructions on where you can stay. We'll get the blocks of rooms set up at a special price, reduced price. Our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. That's our October 28th annual Radio Liberty Conference. And then if you'd like to learn more about sustainable development, I have a great syllabus on this, and it goes along with either a video, Sustainable Development, the Road to World Tyranny, or certainly our four-tape set on sustainable development. We actually have, of course, a great deal of information on global warming. We have a video put together on global warming of our friend Michael Kaufman. That's Dr. Michael Kaufman's video on global warming. Very well done. And then we have a four-tape set on global warming as well. And then, of course, we carry two books. One is called Unstoppable Global Warming. That's Unstoppable Global Warming. The other is called Sustainable Development, or Incorrect Approach to Sustainable Development. It simply gives you the scientific facts that the media will never tell you. To understand the population control, there really is a genocidal program out there, and that is, of course, why they're advocating the use of genetically modified foods, and certainly their bovine growth hormone, recombinant hormone they're putting in our milk, or they're using with the cows to produce more milk. And it actually produces here in milk large amounts of a hormone that has been tied to sevenfold increase in breast carcinoma, sevenfold increase in breast carcinoma, and fourfold increase in prostatic carcinoma. And that's why one in three men in America gets cancer of the prostate. And they're dying. A lot of my friends have died of cancer of the prostate, totally unnecessarily. But you're not going to hear this elsewhere. That's why you really need to get copies of those interviews we've done with Jeffrey Smith. We have two interviews with him where he goes into the background and tells you where you can get the documentation for what we're telling you. And Dr. Blaylock's told us that very, very similar things. It's all in the literature. Your doctor is not being told. Your doctor doesn't know these things. And you're going to have to look after your own health. And you're going to have to understand there is a population control agenda. You need to get my talk on planned population reduction. It's available in DVD form, planned population reduction. We have a four-tape set on population control. It goes into the true story of DDT, which we outlined or banned 34 years ago. And in the meantime, almost 100 million people have died throughout the world of malaria unnecessarily because DDT wasn't banned because it was hurting the eggshells or hurting any of the flora or fauna. It was banned because it was saving too many human lives. And that was what some of the leaders of this population control movement said, including Alexander King of the Club of Rome. It's just saving too many lives. Understand, ladies and gentlemen, we're dealing with people who have a different worldview. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Our web page, radioliberty.com. Please pray for Radio Liberty. We're on the front lines of this truly epic struggle. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views. The views of our guests, and of course right now the views of Marshall Thomas, who has written several books on Project Monarch, and of course has a DVD out which we carry and we offer to you. It's called Project Monarch. And of course, what is Project Monarch? Well, what is Project Monarch, Marshall?
Well, good evening, Dr. Stan. It's great to be with you this evening. Hope you can hear me okay.
You sound like you're sort of in a barrel. Are you on a regular phone?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
Sorry, we're not sounding so good tonight. Yes, I did epidemiology, and I ran across the fact that human beings are being used currently as human guinea pigs in weapons and experimental development program. And I've personally met with over 220 of these individuals.
These are people who were parts of these CIA experimental programs?
That's right, sir. They're unwilling, non-consensual human experimental subjects.
And now, are they still going on today? Because I hear from people all the time who give me these stories as if, you know, I don't know whether they're crazy as a bedbug or they really are being monitored by these forces. We know they've done this in the past. We know that they've created certainly these dissociative personalities, and I'm sure you're well acquainted with the work that was done by the doctor down there, and I think it was Houston, Texas, who wrote the Operation Bluebird.
That's correct. That was Colin Ross.
Colin Ross, right.
Well, first of all, human beings have always been used as experimental subjects by the U.S. government. This goes way back to the end of World War II with the radiation experiments, but also the Tuskegee syphilis studies and various other human experiments that were designed to end in the death of the human being to test out these new weapon systems.
And I think it's so difficult for the Americans to really believe that people in our government would be so crass and indifferent to human suffering that they, of course, would experiment on human beings without their knowledge and consent. But why should we be? After all, the Nazis did it, and of course it was the CIA that brought many of those same cruel and ruthless Nazi scientists to America under Operation Paperclip, and then helped 10,000 Nazis escape to South America, men like Klaus Barbie and Adolf Eichmann and Dr. Mengele and Martin Bormann, and 10,000 Nazis escaped to South America with the full help and support of the CIA, MI6, and certain people within the dark side working at the Vatican in something known as the Rat Line. Why should we be surprised that some of those same experiments would be going on here? In fact, initially they were supervised by the Nazi scientists we brought to America under Operation Paperclip. And most Americans have never heard of that, but we have a wonderful four-tape set on it based upon Linda Hunt's wonderful book, The Secret Agenda.
Well, that's right, Dr. Stan. There was two primary paperclip scientists involved in this particular project. One was Dr. Herman Schwann, who went to work at the University of Pennsylvania, and the other one was Dr. Hubertus Strughold, who led 34 German paperclip scientists in San Antonio, Texas.
Right. And, of course, the fact that most people have never heard of this simply reflects the degree of control that exists today of what the American people think. I'm going to ask if you wouldn't mind just hanging up. I'm going to have my producer call you right back. Okay, Marshall?
Okay, thank you.
Let's see if we can get a better line. So I'm going to ask our producer if he'll call our guest right back, and because I do want you to hear what Marshall has to say. He's done a lot of great work on this, and he's put together a truly great two-hour DVD with all sorts of film footage on the things we're going to be talking about and so much more. We can't possibly cover this in 2 hours. But some of the macabre things that were done by the CIA, certainly we have a government report. We have the Church Committee report on MK Ultra. And then there's the best summary of this is called the Rockefeller Committee report. It came out of the Veterans Administration back in 1994, and really was a report to the Veterans Administration over the name of Jay Rockefeller and Senator Jay Rockefeller. But we think that they certainly cover this superficially. They're really talking about the Gulf War illness and the fact that this was a massive experiment on our own troops during the Gulf War. As you know, about at least over a third of the veterans of the first Gulf War are ill today. Over 80,000 of them are dead. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, over 80,000. If you'd like to see the documentation on that, we'd be glad to give it to you. We have it from the Veterans Administration. And they tell you how many veterans went over and then how many are presumed to be living. It's almost 80,000 have died. How could that be? I mean, why would these young, healthy people who came back, you know, about 15 years ago, 16 years ago from the Gulf, why would they be dying in such large numbers? Well, I'm very much afraid that they're dying because they were being used as guinea pigs. But then this is a standard operating procedure. Marshall, are you there?
Yes, sir, I am.
Oh, you sound ever so much better.
Thank you.
Go right ahead.
Well, two of these primary paperclip scientists were Dr. Hermann Schwann and Dr. Hubertus Strughold.
Right.
Dr. Strughold worked at San Antonio, Texas, and Dr. Schwann worked in the University of Pennsylvania, and both of these men were funded by our military. Dr. Schwann's research into microwave radiation set the standard, the 10 milliwatt standard that we have today, the safety standard. So he wrote essentially the Bible for safety that we use in our cell phones and our microwave ovens and all of our electronic devices. So you see how absolutely crucial these scientists were to our...
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess it's Marshall Thomas, who's actually written several books on Project Monarch, which is a CIA project. And then, of course, he's put together a DVD, which we do offer here. And it's called Project Monarch. And we recommend it to you. We think it's an important addition to your armamentarium to understand the true nature of evil that works within certain elements of our intelligence agencies, works behind the scenes, and, of course, is being concealed by the controlled media. And we were just talking about some of the Nazi scientists who were brought to America following World War II under Operation Paperclip. Most Americans have never heard of Operation Paperclip or the rat line that allowed 10,000 scientists to escape to South America. 10,000, I should say, Nazis. They weren't primarily scientists. We brought many of the scientists to America, although they did let Dr. Mengele get down there. And, of course, had it not been for the concerned Jewish people, and, of course, they tracked down Eichmann and Klaus Barbie and brought them back to justice. And the other 10,000 were lived in South America, and the CIA knew where all of them were, and, of course, concealed that information from the Jews so that they could track them down, and of course, they were down there then plotting on how the Nazis would one day begin continuing moving towards this one world order and working in concert with the people in America who believe in the world order and in Great Britain and those people in Europe. There is a brotherhood out there who wants a global government. And that was the Nazi dream, and it is soon going to come to fruition, I fear. But go ahead, you pick up the story there, Marshall.
Thank you, Dr. Stan. To go with this past, I've got seven essential facts that go with my book to prove that this is going on to these several thousand American citizens right now. The fact that the historical fact of these other experimental programs by the government on human beings, unwilling subjects. The second fact is that human beings, to perfect any weapon system, a new weapon system, you always have to test it out on humanity, whether it's nuclear, chemical, or biological warfare. All these weapon systems have to be perfected to learn how to kill. They have to do it on people. And essentially, what the U.S. government has done is used people they term as expendable or as potential security threats or political activists to use them as cannon fodder for these experiments. Now, third, there's an unclassified body of scientific research by American and Russian scientists that exist, and this includes their, not only their scientific papers, but their patents. Now, these exist in the open, as well as the history of the Russian experimental directed energy weapons program that included attacks on the U.S. Embassy starting in the early 1950s and that continued until the 1970s before it became public knowledge in the U.S. The fourth essential fact that proves our case is that there's a prior criminal behavior history by the U.S. government. These are criminal acts by the U.S. intelligence agencies that date back to the 50s. They can be exemplified by COINTELPRO, which essentially was the FBI and U.S. intelligence agencies in adopting counterinsurgency warfare techniques, including assassination and forced suicide, as a primary tactic to be used against individual American citizens to stop a mass movement from forming. And by mass movement, I mean any kind of progressive group that was lawfully advocating for social change, be it the women's rights movement, the civil rights movement, the environmental movement, the anti-war movement. All these movements were targeted, and they were infiltrated, and these dirty tricks up into and including assassination and forced suicide were used on members of these organizations. And fifth, I'd like to bring our attention to the military doctrine. Now, the military will write papers about these weapon systems, and they will couch these terms like in the future. But it's because these things are classified, they have to say that this is something that's coming about in the future, but essentially what they're talking about is what is happening right now. To those in the know, they need to develop these doctrine about the use of these weapons. And the only weapons that we're aware of, these non-lethal directed energy weapons, like the active denial system that just heats your skin up and can cause second and third degree burns, or even death, depending on how close you are to the instrument and how high they turn it up. This is the most benign type of instrument that they're making public and gradually drawing back the curtain on some of these technologies. These are the kind of technologies that will not create such an intense public backlash. They're the less sinister types, even though this type of non-lethal weapon will cook and kill an individual human being.
I think what's really we have to understand is that really from the inception of communism, the whole world communist movement was financed by the United States. And certainly anybody who would like more information on that, we have little pamphlets we put together. It's called the Communist Capitalist Alliance, based upon a talk given by Solzhenitsyn. But it is my March, April, May, and June newsletters. But you can get them all together in a little pamphlet called the Communist Capitalist Alignment. There has been this effort to, you know, to finance communism because you need an enemy. Then, of course, to counter that enemy, we had to have all this investment of these new and terrible weapons. We had to have our satellites so we could watch the communists. And what are they doing with the satellites now? Why, they're watching the American people. We had to have all these terrible weapons to use against the communists. But, of course, now they can be used against the American people. Just as today we have to have really certainly monitoring, we have to be listening to all the telephone calls, we have to certainly be reading the emails and faxes, you know, of all the American citizens, because we're trying to track down the Islamic terrorists. We've got to have everybody have a RFID identification card. Every law-abiding American citizen. Now, certainly the illegal aliens aren't going to have them, but we're going to insist that the American citizens have them so we can track down the illegal aliens. But the difficulty is, if you catch an illegal alien, They don't do anything to him. They don't report, deport him. The police are not allowed even to report him to the INS. So, of course, when they want these identification cards, they're not aimed at the illegal aliens. They're aimed at monitoring the American people. But we have to have an enemy, and then, of course, to counter the enemy of why we're going to have to give up our freedom, or we're going to have to pay for these massive programs, as we have for so many years, always in the name of fighting communism, which we were actually funding. And when you understand that, so much of what goes on really makes sense. If you have not yet read the book, Wall Street and the Bolshevik Revolution, you need to get it, or The Best Enemies Money Could Buy, or seen my DVD interview with Professor Sutton, why you need to have that. It's called The Best Enemies Money Could Buy. And Professor Sutton spent, you know, 20 years of his life researching how we had funded communism. And because we had that enemy, now we can justify all of these programs here in the United States under MKUltra. So pick the story up, Marshall.
Well, that's a great point, Dr. Stan. A corollary to what you just mentioned is in my book, Monarch, the New Phoenix Program. That's the Echelon system. Essentially, Echelon was the satellite and ground-based listening centers, both in Australia and the UK and in other countries, that the U.S. intelligence agency set up that essentially vacuum up every electronic communication on the Earth. They're designed to collect every fax, every phone, every landline, every kind of electronic communication, every cell phone that's going on continually is vacuumed up by these satellites and essentially downloaded to these ground stations. Now, the ground stations have artificial intelligence programs. This has been going on since the 1980s at least. And with these AI programs, they have keywords. And if you mention something like bomb or biological weapon in your or germ, if you say a keyword in your conversation like I just did with you, immediately the computers on the ground stations automatically start recording our conversation. So this is going on to millions simultaneously with millions and millions of conversations. And this has been going on for about 30 years. Now, initially the United States would share this with Canada, with Australia, and in the United Kingdom. And in order to spy on our own people, it was illegal for the United States intelligence agencies to do so. So we would get the UK to share their take, quote-unquote, with us. So, in other words, they would skirt the law by having our allies spy on our own people, and we in turn would spy on their people for them, thus skirting the letter but not the intent of the law. Now, this has progressed to where the take has been shared with Communist China as well as with the former USSR. So essentially, our intelligence agencies are all collaborating against us, in a manner of speaking. Now, this Echelon system has progressed to higher orders of magnitude with the extremely low-frequency technologies. Like I mentioned, this is 1970s technology that I was speaking of. So if you can imagine a crash program 30 years on, the capabilities have increased incredibly. Now, to go back to my 7 points, the 6th point in my book to prove that this is happening to these people are some of the statements by some of these personalities in our U.S. intelligence agencies, specifically a Colonel John B. Alexander, as well as Ed Dames. These gentlemen have both implicated themselves by their statements in communications with the press.
And, of course, what have they basically said? Were they part of these MKUltra programs?
Well, these gentlemen have all but admitted to it. Ed Dames said in an interview in 1995 that the United States government possesses a psychotronic weapon that can implant thoughts in people's minds.
All right, hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment. Frightening, but, of course, they want to be able to control our every action, our every thought. Go right ahead there, Marshall.
So these new technologies, similar to Echelon, in the 10 megahertz, or excuse me, in the 10 hertz frequency range, are incorporated into the HARP program. HARP is the High Frequency Active Auroral Research Project. It is, in fact, the all-purpose radio frequency radiation and microwave SDI type weapon. HARP was designed to do everything SDI, the Star Wars weapon, was designed to do and more. So essentially the HARP program has functions as the all-purpose tool for numerous uses of these technologies, higher-end technologies. And personalities such as Colonel John B. Alexander have implicated themselves in these new programs, which are targeting some of these several thousand American citizens as experimental subjects. For instance, Colonel Alexander said of the old MKUltra program in his interview with the Washington Post recently, he said, quote, "There were some abuses," this is speaking about MKUltra, "but I would argue that we threw the baby out with the bathwater. It's interesting that it's coming back." And he also went on to say that, talking about the dilemma of the war on terrorism, see, we have this new war now, just like we had the war on communism. The Mujahideen and these terrorists were essentially financed by the CIA as a weapon to use against Russia. They did defeat Russia and Afghanistan, and their follow-on strategy is actually, according to Zbigniew Brzezinski's book, is to seize the nation-states in Central Asia, and by doing so, control the remaining 60% of the remaining oil resources, as well as the vast mineral wealth of Central Asia, and in that way to dominate the world. So essentially we have set up another war that will not end in our lifetime. And according to Colonel John B. Alexander, quote, "What do you do with these people, these enemies in a war without end? Do you keep them in Guantanamo forever? That's impractical. They will come back. Behavior modification could be an alternative," Colonel Alexander says. "Maybe I can fix you or electronically neuter you so it is safe to release you into society so you won't come back and kill me," quote unquote. So essentially, Colonel Alexander is talking about exactly what they're experimenting with right now. He's talking about how to put someone in a type of prison without and to electronically neutralize them without actually imprisoning their physical bodies. And this is exactly what these extremely low frequency radiation weapons are designed to do.
It was really rather frightening when you realize the implications of them, and yet of course they're really very real, and they've experimented with these on people's minds, haven't they? And mind control with them.
That's true, Dr. Stan. These experimentations on perfecting mind control have been going on for over 60 years now. And they've been full emphasis on electronic and remote manipulation of the human central nervous system since the early 1960s. So if you can picture a crash program like a mini Manhattan Project trying to land on the man on the moon and having...
Hold that thought right there, Marshall. We'll be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan and Marshall simply talking about some of the programs that they have. And, of course, these are mind control. Some of them are electronic mind control programs. There have been all sorts of mind control programs financed by the CIA. There's a wonderful book. We don't carry it, but it's called Journey into Madness, written by Gordon Thomas. And it's the story of Dr. Hewan Cameron, who was the head of the American Psychiatric Association and I believe the Canadian Psychiatric Association, who was funded by the CIA as he drove patients intentionally mad. And, of course, he experimented on these normal people without their concern and totally destroyed their personalities and their minds. Dr. Hewan Cameron, and this is well known in Canada because there were lawsuits that were eventually paid off by the Canadian government, and the fact that most people have never heard of the book or Hewan Cameron or these mind-controlled experiments, once again, is a reflection of the fact that they don't want the American people to know. I mean, we cover this in some of our interviews with Mark Phillips and Kathy O'Brien. And, of course, Kathy was a victim of CIA mind control. There's a wonderful book that we do carry called The CIA Doctors. It used to be known as Operation Bluebird. And then Marshall Thomas, who's our guest, has several excellent books on all of these subjects. But I will tell you that I'm really impressed by this. A DVD that we are offering that Marshall had put together was kind enough to let us have copies of Project Monarch. So you go right ahead with the story there.
Well, thank you, Dr. Stan. I've personally met with about 220 of these individual subjects, and I've subjected them to a case study, an epidemiological analysis. I'm a microbiologist by training, and it's possible to assign this group a collective set of risk factors. It'll help our listeners to imagine a huge database with millions and millions of names, perhaps everyone's name in the entire United States. Now, a target is chosen from a computer program by giving a cumulative weighted score to each name as they encounter like a prescribed activity, picture like a demerit. Now, this would function like an elaborate three strikes and you're out program. Every behavior would carry, or kind of infraction would carry, a weighted score, and once a person's name has a certain heavy score, they move up to the head of the queue, as it were, and eventually a person becomes a target and is used for this experimental program. Now, this program was set up by DARPA that uses speed of light anti-personnel technology, and it only ends with the termination, the death of this human subject.
It's sort of like the Tuskegee study, then, isn't it?
That's correct, Dr. Stan. Tuskegee was approximately 400 African-American males who had contracted syphilis, and these men were allowed to die horrible, slow, painful deaths that are unimaginable over many decades' time of suffering in order to study the pathology of the disease syphilis. Whereas this disease had already been around for many centuries and had been well studied. And it was approximately 35 years before a single medical professional lodged a public protest about this program.
We actually have the classic story of Tuskegee in a four-tape set, if anybody's interested, along with the interviews with Peter Buxton, who is that one person out of the entire nation who had the courage to come forward and say, you're killing these men. You don't have the right to do it. And the people at the CDC said, well, this is for science. And he said, it's not for science. You're killing these men. Well, it's an amazing story, but you go ahead, Marshall.
Thank you, Dr. Stan. Thank you. The electronic harassment cases that I visited and interviewed were distinct, but their commonalities tie in with the same profile as MKUltra and COINTELPRO targets. Our first case study we'll call Elizabeth. I visited her in San Antonio, Texas. Now, the average target is a single Caucasian female in her 40s. Elizabeth is case study number one and fairly typical. She is in her early 70s. She's Hispanic and above average intelligence, as are most targets. Now, Elizabeth was a civil rights activist in the 1960s who integrated movie theaters in Dallas, Texas, where previously African Americans had to sit up in the balcony. Now, I would term that strike one, civil rights activity. In the 60s, she picked up a hitchhiker who, unbeknownst to her, was an army deserter. When she reached home, her sister was waiting by the door and said, quote, the FBI was here looking for you. Strike number two, an FBI file entry of any kind. Later, she went on to work for a major oil company and got a security clearance. Strike three is getting a security clearance or any association with the intelligence community. And while working for Chevron, she lived and worked in Iran, learned the language, and lived with an Iranian family, and had close personal relations. I would call this going native. Strike four. Foreign travel.
Well, I thought we'll be back in just a moment with Marshall.
Thank you.
All right, Marshall, pick the story up there.
So Elizabeth is our case study number one. Now, she had engaged in civil rights activity. She had had the FBI observing her, at least casually, when she had given the draft deserter, or excuse me, the draft, the Army deserter a ride, hitchhiking. She had gotten a security clearance, worked for a major oil company, and she did foreign travel. She went to Iran, learned the language, and essentially what I would call went native. When you travel to certain countries, such as Central America or the Middle East, places where our intelligence agencies are intensively active, that is a major risk factor. Now, later in life, she was employed by the state of Texas and was in an elevator accident, left her permanently injured and on a disability. In essence, she was a, quote, drain on the system, strike number five. Now, this is in the terms of eugenics. She was no longer contributing to society. She was taking money out of society. So she was an expendable, what a eugenic scientist would call an empty eater. Now, many of these risk factors may seem innocuous to the casual listener, but actually to the mindset of the hard right-wing perpetrators of COINTELPRO and MKUltra, her civil rights activities in the 1960s and 70s might have led to her assassination under COINTELPRO. Now, J. Edgar Hoover tried for decades to establish a link between the civil rights movement, the anti-war movement, and the communist nations. Though no link was ever proven or ever established, does not never stop these personalities from believing that one did exist. Now, it's the public position of the military intelligence personalities involved in these crimes that the Vietnam War was lost due to betrayal by domestic enemies and not failure against a nationalistic guerrilla war. So anyone who was active in the civil rights or anti-war movement essentially has gotten a file and will never lose this weighted score. And so all these people's names, millions of people's names, are in this computer program, and these few thousand people have been chosen because of their activities, similar to case study number one that I call Elizabeth.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, so...
What actually happened to her then?
Well, Elizabeth, her targeting began about 7 years ago. We'll call this overt targeting. She was under surveillance, she reported, when she was in Iran. Now, 7 years ago, in 2001...
Hold on, I'll help you back here in just a moment here with our special guest. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we're talking with Marshall Thomas about some of the people that he has studied who are under surveillance today, and they're people who are simply being experimented on by our own government. They are certainly have certain scores, and when they fit into a certain category, into a certain prototype, then of course they are they come under the kind surveillance of our government. And these people are targeted for experiments. Could this really happen? Would they really be doing this on innocent people in America? Well, of course they would. They've experimented on all of our military. It's certainly been one thing or another. And if you doubt that, you need to get a book that was released by the Veterans Administration in 1994. We call it the Rockefeller Report, but it was really the report of the Veterans Administration on experiments on service personnel and the general public. But the Rockefeller Report will get it for you. We have it. Official government report came out of the Veterans Administration, 1994, totally suppressed throughout most of the country. So pick up the story, but before we do, Marshall, let's get out your webpage, and of course, if you have a telephone number or anything else you want to get out, we'll get that out as well.
Well, certainly, Dr. Stan. My webpage is Monarch New Phoenix, and you can also see my movie for free at youtube.com/MarsBoy683. That's YOUTUBE.com/MarsBoy683. If you click on playlist, you can see my two-hour movie for free. And if you want to get my book for free, you can go to myspace.com/MarsBoy683, MarsBoy683. Now, we were talking about case study number one. We'll call her Elizabeth. A lot of these targets are what I would term religious dissidents as well. These are people who are not in mainstream religions, and as well as people that have engaged in political activities or in travel and civil rights movement activity. Now, Elizabeth first noticed four nationals moving into her building, and she would leave her apartment. If she left her apartment five times a day, they would enter her home five times a day, steal what they wanted, destroy what they did not wish to steal, and leave. So essentially, they were sabotaging her life on a daily basis multiple times, as well as performing psychological warfare, letting her know that they could cross into her boundaries and taking away her psychological safety and security needs. Her furniture was moved, her appliances were altered. In short, her life was turned upside down. Now, she's a dynamic lady, so she called the police and asserted her rights, but they were not very helpful. They took down her complaints and left. And these same activities would occur day in and day out without fail. Now, all of these TIs learn in very short order that complaining to the authorities is ineffective and eventually counterproductive. You can't tell the police someone came, broke into your home and rearranged your furniture. And that's exactly the kinds of things they do. They subvert your psychological well-being, and they also disrupt your life in a way that if you complain or tell the authorities, essentially you become suspect yourself. Now, this was in the former USSR during the age of detente. Instead of executing political dissidents, this was exactly the same operating procedure they used beginning in the 1960s to harass political dissidents. They would paint them as mentally ill, incarcerate them in institutions, and destroy them with experimental drugs. As well as using this technique in the USSR, they also used microwave attacks on the U.S. Embassy, and they would use these weapons as anti-personnel weapons to attack the same dissidents in their homes and places of business. When the dissidents in the USSR would complain to the authorities, they were forcibly incarcerated in mental institutions. Now, schizophrenia affects people beginning in their 20s or not at all. Adults in their 40s and later do not spontaneously develop this form of mental illness. This is according to Dr. Colin Ross and many other health professionals. Now, Elizabeth, case study number one, is in her 70s. She has no personal or family history background of mental illness. Now, I'm not a psychiatrist, but I've studied psychology. I'm a microbiologist by training. I've known many psychologists, and I've met over 220 of these people. Most of them are in their mid-40s, and these people are not mentally ill. They are under a great deal of distress, and they're having a lot of psychological warfare practiced on them, but these people are perfectly sane.
And it's very, very reminiscent of a story I got from both Chris Ruddy and Ambrose Evan Pritchard. Chris Ruddy, who is the editor of Newsmax, and Ambrose Evan Pritchard, who is a British reporter with the Sunday Telegraph, really two very, very reliable people. And there was a gentleman who actually witnessed the strange happenings at the park in Washington, D.C., where Vince Foster's body was found, and he had a story that totally disproved the official story, you know, of how Vince Foster was killed. And he had, certainly, he was reliable, and he was going to, be, of course, be asked to testify on this before a committee, and he was subject to a planned program of harassment by 30 or 40 people, and of course, since Chris Ruddy and Ambrose Evans Pritchard were interested in his story, they verified it, and this poor fellow would go out, walk along the street, and these people would come and stand in front of him and just stare at him. No physical violence, just stand and stare at him. And this happened repeatedly, or they would suddenly, their harassment, breaking into his home, suddenly doing all of these things to let him know that they were watching him. In fact, this happened to William Rodriguez, who knew what was going on with what had happened at the World Trade Center. He was the man who was in the basement of the World Trade Center on the morning of the attack and heard the explosion in the basement before the plane hit the upper part of the building. It happened to Jimmy Walters, who had spent $8 million of his own money, actually, trying to run full-page ads in the New York Times and running advertisements on television in New York to explain to the people of New York what really happened on 9/11 and the fact that what we'd been told wasn't true. All of these men that break into the house repeatedly because they would be getting threats. They would encounter all sorts of this pattern of harassment until they finally broke their will. Jimmy Walters is living in fear. He's a multi-billionaire, but a multi-millionaire. Anyway, his father was a billionaire, but he was forced to leave the country just to get away from the harassment. And William Rodriguez, of course, his life has been destroyed, but at least he hasn't knuckled under, and he's out there trying to get his story out. So these are pretty standard techniques, aren't they? Breaking into the house, rearranging things, and letting people know that we're watching you, we're watching whatever you do.
Well, that's correct, Dr. Stan. It sounds fantastic, but this is termed a street theater. Now, street theater exists in every major city and every industrialized country. How to describe street theater is difficult. Essentially, these are organized skits of harassment that are aimed at psychological warfare, breaking down the target. Just in the same way that Echelon, the intelligence agencies, were all cooperating with each other, that's exactly what's happening here to dissidents with street theater. Just a quick example, triggers. Now, in South America, the intelligence services were trained by the U.S., and they would torture people, dissidents or critics of the government. They would emotionally and physically break them. Now, the traumatized victim was released back onto the streets to serve as a warning to others who might challenge the authoritarian government. So one of the main tactics was using a trigger or a stimulus. Now, an example of this was in South America, dissidents were routinely tortured with a Coke bottle. I hate to say this, but the truth is they were often sodomized with a Coke bottle. Now, this initial act was designed to produce pain and suffering, humiliation. But once the person was released back in the community, every time they came in contact with a Coke bottle, or Coke being the most seen product or advertising jingle on the planet, they would relive the pain and suffering and humiliation. Now, street theater was designed to stimulate triggers. So once this stimulus had been implanted in this unfortunate victim, street theater would consist of the victim, if the target was walking down the street and a person in this group, say 20 to 40 individuals who follow and stalk the subject in public places, would stand in front of the subject with a Coke bottle in their hand and drink suggestively and grin or sneer at the person as they walk by. Now, the target is trying to forget what has happened to them just in the preceding months or years, and here's the stimulus again, and purposely this person is standing in front of them, blocking their path or bumping into them, invading their personal space, and sneering or saying something like, "You like Coke," and laughing at them. Now, essentially, you know, normal life, this would be a typical occurrence that might happen once a week. But if this happened 10 or 20 times a day, essentially that is a type of psychological warfare that's very debilitating. And this is what a trigger is. It is using the stimulus over and over again to traumatize the individual multiple times a day. And this is used ad nauseum with quite a bit of imagination against these targets that I've met, these 220 individuals.
And have some of them actually broken down into a schizophrenic-like response, or what?
Well, you would think that case study number one. Now, Elizabeth is a fairly typical target. She's in her 70s, a Hispanic lady, above average intelligence, but she's very strong-willed and very resilient. Now, you would think that being harassed in public and having people break into your house and do this to your personal possessions would break down a person. This by itself was not sufficient to break down Elizabeth. Now, the thing that is really terrible about this is she is now being used as a human guinea pig in the weapons development program for microwave non-lethal weapons. So she's attacked with non-lethal weapons that, for instance, deliver subdermal microwave burns, electric shocks and sting, and a generalized physical wasting of her physical body. Her central nervous system is under attack when she is awake and when she is asleep.
Why doesn't she just move away from this spot?
Well, that's exactly what most targets do. You have a fight-or-flight response. Now, in short, whenever she attempts to move to any other state, any other locality, it takes approximately 2 weeks for the perpetrators of these acts to set up on the person again. So, in very short order, these people are able to move into any community, into any building, any apartment, any neighborhood, any suburb in the United States or any industrialized country, and set up these weapons and begin torturing these targets again. This is essentially an outgrowth of the cooperation seen in the Echelon program. What initially was the Australian, the United States, the Canadian, and the Great Britain working together was expanded to include China, Russia, and other industrialized countries. So essentially what you have been talking about, this one-world government, this program to, in effect, subvert constitutional democracy, is exactly what is happening here. Is being perfected. These weapon systems are exactly what are going to be used to bring about this new world order. Now, these human beings, these several thousand Americans that represent the targets, the experimental group here in the United States, these people are essentially function as human guinea pigs to perfect the weapon system, but also as war games. These people are essentially categorized much like the people in Guantanamo have a biscuit team. A biscuit team consists of a medical doctor, a psychiatrist or psychologist, and the intelligence agency professionals, corporate or military or both. And this team tailor makes a torture program, a psychological warfare campaign, and a physical torture program tailor suited for the individual involved. Now that is pretty much exactly what is happening to all of these individuals. Now, Elizabeth represents case study number one. Now, Elizabeth will be studied how she reacts to this torture and these attacks and this harassment, and to the degree that they are able to neutralize and control her behavior, she will be an example, much like a war game is used, for all future people that resemble her, for all personalities in the future that resemble Elizabeth, case study number one. They will have, essentially, a groundbreaking study done already on how to neutralize this person who resembles Elizabeth. Much in the same way that the United States military would use captured Russian equipment and go out into the desert and form a red team and a blue team, and the red team would play the Russians, and they would use Russian tactics of the USSR in a military war game against the blue team, which would use American tactics and would use this as a training exercise and a learning experience on how to defeat the enemy. That is exactly what is happening to all these different personalities. To perfect this new world order, essentially you are going to have to subdue all these different personalities and all these different cultures, language groups across ages, sex, religions. So these personalities essentially are functioning as human guinea pigs, not only to perfect the weapons, but also to perfect the psychology of control.
So that's just like 1984 then, huh?
I'm afraid so, Dr. Stan. Just as George Orwell predicted, picture a circle within a circle within a circle. Now, Orwell's society was built on 1% of the population controlling 15%. So the 1% was the inner party, the elite. They controlled the 15%. They were the outer party. Still the in-crowd, and the 1% used the 15% to control the remaining population, the proles, the 84%. So you and I and the rest of humanity essentially will be the proles, all the people that they will be using to target us with these weapons and with this harassment will be viewed as the 15%, while the elite controllers of the New World Order will be the 1%. This is exactly the formulation of George Orwell. 1984.
And of course, Orwell, I believe, probably channeled his whole book. He knew exactly what the future held. He had been part of the World Socialist Movement himself, And at the time he wrote, 1984, he was living on an isolated island, and he was really very, very seriously ill, and eventually did die of tuberculosis himself. But I really believe he had tremendous insight into exactly what these wicked and evil people plan for the world, because these people have a different worldview. They dream a different dream. They march to a different drumbeat. They respond to the sound of a different trumpet, because they worship a different God. And until people understand that they really are subservient to another God who has another plan, and that plan entails a one-world government, a one-world religion, and the destruction of Christianity and Judaism, and yes, even the Muslim faith, and then, of course, this new world leader who will soon be upon us. Could this really be true? Is there a spiritual component behind what's going on? You bet there is. We'll be back in just a moment to wrap up tonight's program. Well, Marshall, you go right ahead.
Well, thank you, Dr. Stan. I want to go back just briefly to our case study number one, Elizabeth. Her study is very heartbreaking, but it exemplifies exactly what the targets, these 220 people I've met, are going through. Now, not only is her physical body attacked, her sleep is deprived of these microwave weapons, but her hypothalamus causes, being microwaved, causes her emotional state to be actively manipulated remotely, just as Dr. Alan Fry accomplished with animals in 1958. Her REM stage sleep is interrupted, and she is kept in a constant state of elevated stress and physical exhaustion that is designed to neutralize her and eventually kill her. Her belief systems are subject to manipulation, and just as in the manual from the CIA dating to the 1960s, she is manipulated with radio-hypnotic intracerebral control and electronic dissolution of memory. In short, when she attempts to sleep, she is wide open to attack on her memory and her purposeful behavior. Now, some of these patents, I'll refer to briefly the Smirnoff patent, which is owned by Psychotechnologies Corporation of Richmond, Virginia. This company is owned by the same people who are doing remote viewing programs. These are NSA, U.S. Intelligence Agency operatives, specifically General Albert Stubblebine, Ed Dames, Colonel John B. Alexander, General Michael Aquino, and others. They control Psychotechnologies Corporation of Richmond, Virginia. They own the Smirnoff patent, and it works by sending messages just above the level of human hearing. The subliminal message is received by the unconscious mind, and the human being responds to the commands, in quote, in the words of Dr. Smirnoff, as a command from God you cannot disobey. Essentially, this is the perfection of the concept of subliminal suggestion.
But, of course, really, aren't these people tapping into the occult and they're tapping into the supernatural?
Well, essentially, Dr. Stan, this is a cover. It's a psychological warfare operation, and they're using belief systems as a screen for technology. They have set up these satanic groups. They've either infiltrated a lot of cult-like groups or set these up through the government from the beginning.
Well, I wish we had more time, but we're going to have you on for another couple of evenings. I think what your message is so vitally important. People must begin to understand that certainly there really are satanic groups, and certainly General Michael Aquino, incidentally, used to be colonel, but I understand he's a general now, isn't he?
According to my research, I have one source that has said that he is an NSA general.
Right, we're out of time. Good night. God bless. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I hope you enjoyed the interview with Michael Thomas. But Michael is really, I wish you could hear the whole program. We do take breaks there, and if you'd like to get the entire tape, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. But we do carry his DVD. It's 2 hours. We recommend it strongly. It's called Operation or Project Monarch. That's Project Monarch. And then if you really would like more information on these subjects, we have a 4-tape set on on mind control. We have a book called Programmed to Kill, about, of course, how these programs are used to program people to be murderers. We have a book on satanic crimes. We have a book entitled The CIA Doctors. It's written by Dr. Colin Ross, who's worked with many of the tragic victims of the CIA, where they've actually created these dissociative personalities. We have, of course, the report on MK Ultra, the Church Committee hearings, the Senate Committee that looked into this. We have the Rockefeller Committee report, and there's really so much here that we have, Chris, the four tape or four CD set on Tuskegee, where they recruited over 400 black men with syphilis and told them we're going to treat them, and they didn't intend to treat them. They wanted to kill them. These were government employees at the CDC and certainly at the highest levels of our government who set out to kill 400 black men. And this is really one of the most touching four tape sets we have. It's called Project Tuskegee, or just Tuskegee. And if you have never heard it, you really must. We have, of course, Garth Nicholson's wonderful book, Project Daylily. Dr. Nicholson, one of the world's leading scientists, and of course he discovered the experiments they were doing in Huntsville, Texas, where of course they were introducing these new genetically created diseases and producing epidemics of multiple sclerosis and of course Lou Gehrig's disease. And of course there's so much information that is available. We carry the book The Transformation of America, that's TRANCE. It is written by Kathy O'Brien and Mark Phillips. Got a whole section in there on Dick Cheney. And, of course, Kathy O'Brien's relationship, a very intimate relationship with Dick Cheney. And, of course, he gives perversion a bad name. Well, let me tell you that certainly Dick Cheney is one of the most evil men in the world today. He's the Vice President of the United States. The book was written long before Dick Cheney became the Vice President, Transformation of America. We carry the book Access Denied. All of these and so much other information, our four tapes out on mind control, are available from Radio Liberty. Our four tapes out on Skull and Bones. Our four tapes out on the Bohemian Grove. Of course, and if you've never seen that DVD, the Secret Mysteries of the Bohemian Grove, these four tapes out, DVD on the Bohemian Grove put together by Alex Jones. You want to see it, where the leaders of our nation are there in their black robes and with their candles and their strange chants as they worship in front of the giant owl. And we actually have some of the publications put out by the Bohemian Grove that nobody is supposed to have, but we were able to purchase them from a used book company, where they talk about how they venerate the owl. They venerate, that means to worship. They venerate the owl. Why, the owl is Moloch. The owl is Satan. And this is the Bohemian Grove. We actually have a four-tape set of the Bohemian Grove. We have the DVD by Alex Jones, The Secret Mysteries of the Bohemian Grove. Please go to our website. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Because we are under attack today. Get the information. Check it out. Could it be true? Will you join us in this struggle?